From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Friday, January 18th marks the first annual Indigenous People's March, a major gathering in Washington, D.C., expected to draw at least 10,000 Indigenous activists from all over the world. There will be smaller solidarity marches in cities around the country. Indigenous-led movements have been on the forefront, especially in recent years, of the fight for climate justice and also for greater sovereignty in their stewardship of the land and air. There are many common threads in the struggles facing diverse tribes and First Nations peoples the world over. The marchers at the first annual Indigenous People's March intend to highlight those common causes. I'm very pleased now to welcome to our program Chase Iron Eyes, a leading Indigenous activist and member of the Standing Rock Sioux, former congressional candidate in North Dakota. He's joined by his daughter, Tokata Iron Eyes, a youth activist who is deeply involved in the Standing Rock actions together with her father against the Dakota Access Pipeline. Thank you so much for joining us, Chase and Tokata.
Yes, happy to. Thanks for having us on.
So let's talk about why there is the need for such a march. It's the first annual Indigenous People's March. There have been many struggles, as I mentioned, many movements, many political stands and civil disobedience actions for many years. But why is there a need, in your opinion, Chase, let me start with you, for an Indigenous People's March?
Well, For the longest time, we have been swept under the rug. You know, our Holocaust, our genocide is denied by the country that currently occupies our homelands and imposes itself upon us. And so we need a proactive approach, and everybody who's involved in planning the inaugural Indigenous People's March knew each other and knows each other from the Battle of Standing Rock, from the No Dapple struggle, which saw tens of thousands of people come in person, millions of people in the immediate area in the United States and Canada, and billions of people around the world participated and was able to partake in a spiritual awakening. As Indigenous nations, as part of the organizers, we feel that, you know, our economics, our politics, our the institutions of capital, we feel that we have been lied to in terms of defining to ourselves what civilization is, what that means, what progress is, what that means, what success is, and what that means. And we believe that people are waking up, that they want to know the truth, they want to know who they are, why they're here, and where they came from. Those big questions that we've been asking ourselves since the dawn of humanity. And thankfully, Indigenous nations have kept alive their worldviews. Our worldviews, our life ways, our cultures, our languages, our metaphysics, our philosophies, our knowledge systems, our complete knowledge system. So it's, we have to make alliances. We have to build bridges, and people who are organizing this march come from the Occupy movement. They come from the Sunrise movement, from Black Lives Matter, from the Justice League. I mean, more than half of the people who stood with us, who took less lethal bullets with us, who were permanently maimed, who lost their eyesights, who had their arms almost blown off by armed, private, militarized, contracting police at the No Dapple struggle are what we would call non-native. And so we have to come to Washington, D.C. and let politicians know, politicians like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, they need to know that they can be brave, they can be bold, that the streets, the res, and the people of this country, the majority of whom are struggling, are suffering at the hands of a guy who is holding their food hostage, their pay hostage. Almost a million American workers, the working class in this country, is being punked right now. We've seen this before. We've been subjected to sign or starve. Either comply or watch your kids starve. That's what they did to try to give us the Black Hills, try to get us to give it up. And now that's what they're doing to the American people. Donald Trump just issued a letter back to Nancy Pelosi after Pelosi said she was going to cancel his State of the Union address because of the shutdown. Donald Trump is, in a petty manner, is firing back, saying he's going to cancel her trip to Egypt and Afghanistan. And so we see that what's going on here in Washington is in shambles. They do not represent the true electorate, the true patriots of this country. And people who are willing to take that step forward to say, we need a Green New Deal now, we need to end the government shutdown now, they need to know that we have their back in the streets, whether that's the Indigenous People's March, the Women's March, March for Our Lives, or whoever it is. We are here to build bridges with those movements and create solidarity.
I want to turn to Tokata Iron Eyes, daughter of Chase Iron Eyes. Tokata, how important is youth activism in this struggle, particularly on the issues around climate change and with the work that you did and you and other youth activists did in the protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline? Do you see this as a very important moment for Indigenous youth activism?
Yes, I do, because, you know, the entire Standing Rock movement was a youth-led initiative. And to, you know, we're seeing now more and more as youth are using their voices to inspire action, people are listening. And so especially as, you know, as this is happening, Indigenous youth are going to be at the forefront of that, because Indigenous people have, you know, this God-given knowledge that's been embedded into us since we were children, that, you know, the earth is sacred, and that, you know, Mother Earth is another, like, being. She is alive and she cares for us. And these, you know, Indigenous values are what needs to be taught. You know, Indigenous peoples have been fighting for something, you know, like a Green New Deal for hundreds of years. That's just, you know, our lifestyle. And so now to see these, you know, politicians taking initiative in that is really amazing. And we can see that, you know, when you speak up, it works. And, you know, that's what also why these marches are so important. Indigenous people are not represented in, like, media very often. And what it is, and when it, and when we are, it's usually in a historic Western movie, or it's, you know, on the news. So if we want our kids to see what leaders Indigenous people can be, sometimes it takes people going out into the streets and showing them what strength and power Indigenous people still have. Because a lot of the times we are talked about as historic artifacts, as beings that are long lost and, you know, are ancient. And so to be able to bring life and humanization back to Indigenous peoples is really important. And especially just to put a face to some of these issues that Indigenous peoples are facing. A lot of the times, you know, the matters that we're discussing are matters of life and death. You know, with the missing and murdered Indigenous women, there are people, including myself, who are scared to walk out their front doors in the morning. You know, just this past week, past couple of weeks, I went back to my homelands in Standing Rock, and I was actually in a high-speed car chase with my friends and an unidentified male in a truck. And I didn't know if I was going to return that day. And these are, like, not uncommon stories among Indigenous young women and girls. This is just a reality that we face every day.
And I should mention that the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women is going to be one of the issues being raised at the march on Friday, the first annual Indigenous People's March, which we are discussing with my guests, Tokata Iron Eyes, who, by the way, is only 16 years old, and her father, Chase Iron Eyes, both of them prominent Indigenous activists. Chase, can you give me a sense of the international scope of the march and the common threads that you will be making and identifying with other Indigenous communities the world over? On our program, we'd recently covered the struggles of the Unist'ot'en clan in British Columbia, Canada, that's fighting a battle against a major pipeline company to stop a pipeline coming through their territory. Will those sorts of issues and causes also be raised?
Yes. So part of why, you know, we do marches like this. First of all, doing, you know, a permitted march where there are credentials, where there are admission bans and so forth. That's something new to Indian country. We're not used to getting permits and so forth. And we need all, we need warriors on all fronts, every front line. So we want to return the spotlight to the front line. We know from Standing Rock, after 850 people were arrested and all of that violence, we suffered a trauma at Standing Rock. A lot of the people I know were hurt very deep in their spirit and physically. So we only have those rights so far as we are willing to defend, either with our lives or with our liberty. And right now I used to be facing 6 years in prison, but I took a plea deal to stay out of prison because I know that's where they were trying to send me back. And now I'm on probation. So those people at line three in Wisconsin, in Minnesota, those people at Unistoten, the brothers and sisters with the tiny house warriors fighting Kinder Morgan, the people at No Bayou Bridge, and all of our brothers and sisters who will gather with us when we fight the Keystone XL pipeline, which is set to come through the Pine Ridge Reservation, the Cheyenne River Reservation, Sioux territory that we protected. When I say we only have those rights such as we are willing to defend, we only have free, prior, and informed consent if we are willing to defend it. Because it appears to me that Donald Trump, Prime Minister Trudeau, New Zealand, Australia, the new, what's his name in Brazil, Bolsonaro, these people, these type of people who represent the big financial extractive, all privatized everything, endless war machine that has given all of humanity a shelf life of maybe 100 years, we have to realize that we don't have the time. We don't have the luxury to be patient and to wait for all the congressional committees to consider whether or not climate change is real. Like, the Arctic caps are melting, sea levels are rising, the temperature is going up. So those politicians need to act now. They don't have time to wait. We can't wait for corporate Democrats to give Ocasio-Cortez the permission to be as progressive as we know the real ones in there want to be. So we on the streets have to stand up for them.
Now, I'm glad you brought up the issue of progressive members of Congress like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. This past congressional election race also saw the election for the very first time of two Native American women. There were literally, there'd never ever been Native American women in Congress, Charisse Davids and Deb Haaland. How important, Tokata, is it to see that kind of representation in Congress, and will that be something that the marchers on Friday will see as a positive sign for moving forward on Indigenous rights?
I think it is so important. Like, as for myself, you know, before Standing Rock, I never saw myself as an activist or a public speaker. And so when a kid, especially, you know, people who are younger and in this generation and who are Indigenous, when you see like this sort of inspiration coming from somebody who looks like you, someone who is raised by you, it opens millions of possibilities for you that you could never see before. That's what Standing Rock did for me. And I know that Deb Haaland and Ocasio-Cortez being elected, or Charisse Davids being elected, and people like Ocasio-Cortez, these are, you know, doors. They're opening doors for Indigenous and POC. They're opening doors for us, and it's really good to see. And it's just sad that it took this long to happen. That's the only thing, you know, it took somebody like Trump to stir up enough anger and just fight to, you know, get the right people in the office.
So we have this major march happening the day before the Women's March as well. What do you hope to get out of the march? Chase Iron Eyes, this is, you know, marches are usually just one prong, right, of a broader struggle. They sometimes end up being the culmination of a particular cause and end up taking a cause nowhere. But if done right, a march can actually fuel movement. So what is the goal of this march?
The goal is to create solidarity and to make sure that all of these demographics that maybe we only met each other at Standing Rock, but we have to come together. Right now, we're being attacked. We are under attack. President Trump, by his rhetoric and even using the term Pocahontas and using it as a slur, to objectify indigenous women, to call into question and to form the foundation for why there are so many sisters missing, murdered, and indigenous. To call out Senator Elizabeth Warren and just to use the rhetoric that he's using, we have to be able to respond immediately. We need a presidency that is going to act now to end the shutdown. People in my homelands will die if the shutdown continues. But most importantly, as the original civilizers of this entire hemisphere, we are offering our voice. Though we have been genocided, though we have survived a Holocaust, here we are trying to stand in our truth, trying to stand in our compassion and offer a hand. We're trying to offer a forgiving hand to our colonizer. We're trying to say that we need to own this empire. The 100 plus women, an entire new energy, 100 women strong power block, completely changed the face of the halls of Congress. Joe Lieberman, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, and anybody else that's over 70 years old, who is trying to put the reins on Ocasio-Cortez, they need to know that we are even more progressive than that, and we are willing to sacrifice everything to have to see that our families, not only do they not starve, not only are they availing themselves of our birthrights, our constitutional rights, and so forth, but they have the birthright of clean water and a healthy ecosystem. We have to be willing to sacrifice for those rights. If we're not, we only have those rights which we're willing to defend. And if we do not defend them, if we don't come together at the Indigenous Peoples March, our rights will continue to be eroded, and austerity is already being imposed, and we will continue to go down that path of tyranny. We can't allow that.
So tell us about how this march, Tokara, is going to be perceived and felt, and also the solidarity marches that are happening in cities around the country. If people can't make it on Friday to Washington, D.C., well, it's already too late to make plans if you aren't there already. Are there solidarity marches in different cities? Will this be an annual occurrence that you hope will continue to happen and expand?
Yes, there are several different sister marches in different cities. And I think, you know, maybe we don't have all of the funds to do this annually, but the solidarity that we are creating by coming here this year is hopefully going to be spread. You know, we want to spread, you know, make sure that we are bonding and combining and, you know, meeting with Indigenous peoples internationally and not just Native Americans, not just First Nations in Canada. We want to make sure, because, you know, the genocide and the atrocities that are committed amongst one Indigenous people is felt by every Indigenous people, because we face the same problems. You know, in America, we have reservations. In Australia, you have missions. It's the same story told with different words everywhere you go. And so no matter, you know, what we call ourselves, we stand as one, and we are one people. And what is felt by one is felt by all. And so we just want to stand in that solidarity and be, you know, everyone is stronger in unity. And so we want to spread that message and be able to build each other up. And that goes for, you know, like, also standing in solidarity with the children being taken at the borders. These are colonial borders, and they are separating indigenous families. And that is, you know, indigenous peoples were here long before these imposed borders, long before these imposed governments. And so to be able to stand in solidarity with kids who are alone right now, kids my age, kids younger than me, are dying in custody because of the U.S., and that is something that needs to be in the light. And, you know, the front lines are everywhere. It's just right now there's not a camera on them. And so just being able to share that message and to be able to spread light on some of these issues that aren't being covered.
And finally, Chase Iron Eyes, I want to pick up on what you started out our conversation discussing, which is the importance of solidarity between Native and non-Native communities. I understand that this march is, and as you were saying, is open to those who want to be in solidarity with Indigenous groups, even if you happen to not be somebody of Indigenous origin. How important is that? And are there ways for people to financially support this effort? Because as Tokata was saying, you may not be able to afford to organize it every year. It takes tremendous amount of resources to put on such a march like this. So can you talk or speak to some of those ways in which solidarity can express itself?
Yes. Well, just go to indigenouspeoplesmovement.com to find out how to sponsor. We very much need that. We also want to send the message that we are all Indigenous. That doesn't mean that I don't want to call into question that international term of art that we've fought for as Indigenous nations who are fighting every day, fighting colonialism and constructs designed to bring about our genocide and our extinction. But every human being, if you search back far enough, one of our leaders said, if you lose something and you look for it hard enough, you will find it. And we feel that human beings are naturally inclined to seek, spiritually seek the truth and seek liberation. For human beings to do that, you will be guided toward your Indigenous roots. We are all facing existential crises. We are facing water shortages, water privatization, peak oil. We're facing peak capitalism right now. The entire veil is being pierced. We're realizing that we don't take deforestation into the calculus of our GDP. We don't take species extinction. When a corporation poisons a river, we don't put them to capital punishment. We don't even criminalize them. In fact, we criminalize the people who are protecting the water. We have political prisoners right now during our time. Little Feather, Red Fawn, Michael Marcus, Leonard Peltier. Go to who is Leonard Peltier.info. Leonard Peltier has been in prison longer than I've been alive for protecting Mother Earth and protecting his people. Mumia Abu-Jamal, you know, this cross-sectionality. There's being born Indigenous is like being born into a struggle. We don't have a choice. Our lifestyle is criminalized. If we want to protect our water for our children, then I got to face 6 years in prison for that. So we are on a mission to re-civilize the world, re-spiritualize the world, to get people to think differently about what civilization is, what progress is, what success is. And we feel that there people are ripe for this message right now.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and thank you for bringing up Leonard Peltier, of course. Good luck with the march. Again, the website is indigenouspeoplesmovement.com. Chase and Tokata, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
My guests have been Chase Iron Eyes, a leading Indigenous activist, member of the Standing Rock Sioux, former congressional candidate in North Dakota. He's also an attorney with the Lakota Law Project. And his daughter, 16-year-old Tokata Iron Eyes, a youth activist who was also deeply involved in the Standing Rock actions against the Dakota Access Pipeline. We've been discussing the first annual Indigenous Peoples March slated to take place Friday, January 18th in Washington, D.C., with sister marches around the country. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes, and our video channel on Vimeo.